time of week again, guys. Welcome to the 51-yard line, episode 19. We're taping this on a surprisingly chilly Tuesday evening. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Tyler Berry. To my left, the incorrigible Drew Willers.
It's May 6th.
That? Yeah, okay. To my
he speaks true.
To my other left, the pride of Boston, Massachusetts, Christian Schneider.
Boston is the adopted town, but yeah, I'll take it.
You know,
they're very proud enough of me there.
and to my other left, the Antichrist of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Steve Ravens.
What's up, everybody?
I didn't know. I was trying to think of a better word for it, but I didn't. Wow, guys, it was a crazy eventful weekend for sports. Probably
twice.
One of the most hectic weekends for sports in recent history, I would say.
Absolutely.
So, for sure.
I don't know. We got a lot to cover. Why don't we just get on into it? Let's talk about the fight of the century. I'm using air quotes. The fight of the century.
There was a fight this weekend?
Sure.
There was a fight.
There was a fight this weekend. It was called the undercard of the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight.
Who fought? Who fought?
Komachenko and
they fought.
I missed it.
So
the Spurs and the Clippers fought.
So if you're living under a rock for the past 75 days or so, this past Saturday was the fight that was billed the boxing match of the century. Money Mayweather versus Manny Pac-Man Pacquiao. We all watched it in my house, me and Drew's house. My voice is exactly how I felt about that.
Underwhelming is a word that comes to mind.
Boom!
It was bad.
Honestly, after all that buildup and hype, you know, hindsight's 20/20. I don't think any fight could have lived up to
the hype of that.
I don't think we'll ever see anything like that again. Certainly not for boxing. I don't think we ever will.
There's a reason why Ollie Frazier is the true fight of the century.
That's true.
Actually lived up to the hype, and it's like the only one that did. Lennox Lewis Tyson didn't live up to the hype. You know,
Ollie Foreman lived up to the hype.
Yeah, I mean, because of the way it ended, it being
sure,
so unexpected.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah, but overall,
it turned me off.
As
a casual fan, I'm completely turned off to ever purchasing or being a part of something like that ever again.
Oh yeah, screw boxing was my takeaway.
Literally everyone that was in our home the other night. Yeah. No one was happy with the way that went.
Yeah.
And the best undercard of the night. Well, you guys weren't really watching it, but that Santa Cruz fight, man, that eighth round knockout, that was fantastic. Or ninth round knockout, that was awesome. Like, I was like watching back and forth between the Clippers Spurs and that fight. That fight was awesome. That fight was what Mayweather Pacquiao should have been. That was fantastic.
That was a solid two screener moment right there. Having that fight and Spurs Clippers going at the same time.
Yeah,
it was good.
That was fun. I don't know. Did you guys have anything you wanted to say about the fight? I don't need to say much. I wrote a piece for our website, 51yardline.com, about why I think America was just completely duped about this fight. Drew asked me right after the fight Saturday, he just goes, were we just taken for a ride right there? And I couldn't stop thinking about it, and I ended up writing a piece about it last night because I just couldn't stop thinking about that question.
I mean, you just think about how many guys there were like us that have never ever paid for a fight, that don't follow boxing you know, as much as we follow other sports, you know, and you know, you pitch this big grandioso hyped up thing here, and really the only thing that I took away from it was that Pacquiao had an undisclosed injury that nobody knew about until after the fight was over, after everybody basically got their money, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
The fight wasn't really necessarily anything spectacular to watch.
Nope.
Neither guy really seemed all that really, I don't know, like, I mean, I get the respect factor at the end of boxing where guys go up and they're like, hey man, you battled your heart out, but like, neither guy really did feel like they broke much of a sweat. They were smiling and laughing, and then I just was staring at the screen. I was like, these guys just freaking worked us all over.
Yep.
Well, like, they just took us for a ride.
I'll bridge that a little bit. The dude who I was pissed at the end of this fight was Pacquiao, because for starters, he was just delusional about how he claimed he won the fight, because anybody in their right minds would have said he lost handily. Here's the thing with Mayweather, though. Mayweather fights like that. Mayweather didn't seem like he's breaking a sweat. He makes his fights boring. He whacks you a couple times in the round, plays defense and counterpunches, takes the air out of the building, and
he's the smartest.
He wins.
He's probably the smartest fighter from a keeping track of points standpoint in the history of boxing.
That's how he wins.
But and you can respect that to a degree, but that doesn't make for good fights. And Pacquiao's just a crazy person.
Yeah. Though, I mean, just the fact that he was playing with a torn rotator cuff just makes you want to throw stuff. It's like, I mean, look, we mentioned Ali Foreman. You know, that fight was delayed. They pushed it back because I think Foreman caught something. He had an infection or something out in Nigeria?
I can't remember.
An African country where you catch things. And they pushed the fight back, and that was fine. I would much rather have waited another month and hopefully gotten Pacquiao at full strength. Because for crying out loud, you're not going to beat Floyd Mayweather with a torn rotator cuff.
I don't know. You know what, man? At the end of the day, I don't even think that was even on the radar, actually. I mean, the only one who really gave a shit about winning, I think, was Mayweather, just to keep his record perfect.
Yeah. And Pacquiao got his money, so what was
it? Pacquiao got his money.
I wish they wouldn't pay fighters before the fight. I wish you didn't get a dime before the fight.
In the old days, I don't think you did, but unfortunately things...
Well, for non-prize... I mean, this was a prize fight, so it's like you get the money up front, and then you get a percentage of the purse, depending on, like, your contract. But, like, yeah, non-prize fights, I'm pretty sure you don't get paid until you participate.
You know, I'm so torn about, you know, no pun intended, but, like, the torn rotator cuff. God. Because think about it, it's like, you know, you have the balls to go in there and fight Mayweather, you know, like that. But at the same time, it does frustrate me because not only, A, are you're robbing us of an actual fight that you, at 100% healthy, very well could win. I mean, we saw spurts of greatness from him.
Yeah.
And considering the injury he had, that's pretty incredible. He was, like, in the round four, round six, where he really exploded on Mayweather, that was impressive. And the fact that he did it with a torn rotator cuff, hey, that's even more impressive. You're fighting one arm. That's pretty good.
Well, it was a split decision through six rounds, wasn't it? Yeah.
So that's pretty impressive. However, as impressive as that makes me, it kind of segues into me being pissed off. He's like, because you decided to fight with that and not tell anybody about it and not just push it back, we got robbed of what could have been the fight of the century. We got robbed. We did. And I mean, and as far as that whole, you know, thinking he won, the only reason I'm going to give him slack in that department is because, unlike us, he wasn't seeing what the scores were being tallied.
Right. So, and he was here in the crowd, which...
And he was here in the crowd screaming, Manny.
Yeah.
Every time, you know, I mean, yeah, you feel yourself getting hit, but also, I mean, in the haze of it all, who knows? The punches that you're throwing, depending on how numb your hand is, for all you know, who knows? Maybe you think you're hitting the guy, even though you're not. So I'm going to give him like a little slack in that piece. You know what? We're seeing all the scores down at the bottom. He's not. Right. I'll let that slide. I mean, whatever. But the torn rotator cuff, I mean, that again, I give him props for fighting with it. But at the same time, I'm really pissed off about it because everybody who tuned into that fight got robbed. Just got straight robbed.
Basically, we got robbed of $100, and Steve and I got robbed of another 50. For even, because if we had known that there was no chance of Pacquiao winning this fight,
we never
would have bet money on it.
No, I mean,
to be fair, that's our fault. We don't have to bet on things, but at the same time, it's just like.
Really, but again,
if we had a little bit more information, we never would have put any money on it.
Or hell, we would have put money on Mayweather.
Mayweather, yeah,
but
made a lot less off of it, but still. Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to spend too much time on this. It's fucking... It was depressing. I'm kind of still depressed about it. I'm angry about it. I don't have any interest in ever ordering another pay-per-view boxing match again. I don't have anything else. That's it.
I think there's a lot of guys, a lot of fans, sports fans that showed up casually this Friday that will never, ever be here ever again.
Oh, yeah.
I think boxing really hurt itself in that department.
The boxing's been on a slide. This is confirmation.
Yep.
Man, that sucks for all the.
Because after all that, I'm like, this is really neither. I mean, At the end of it, I was like, man, I just gave that woman beater. I'm like, what? Really? I'm completely turned off from boxing, 100%. Let's move on. Yeah, man.
Let's put effort into people who actually put effort in.
Let's talk about sports we like, know, and are passionate about.
Well, I mean, I still like boxing, but I'm just not going to pay for a pay-per-view.
And I know what you guys are saying is probably true, but still, I hope that that fight alone doesn't stain the legacy of boxing, because there's so much great stuff, great history in boxing.
Oh, I don't think, it's just
the future of it? Yeah.
I think it's in trouble. Yeah.
It's not going to make the thrill in Manila less cool.
No, it's not going to make a lot of really good
things. Not a lot of people are buying pay-per-view for the next few years, that's for sure.
I'm certainly not. Let's move on to what was the best undercard of Saturday night, which turned out to be Spurs-Clips Game 7.
Oof.
That was, I don't know, the only word that comes to mind is fucking insane.
Classic. Like, instant classic. Maybe one of the top five first round games I've ever seen, for sure.
Definitely one of the best in the last
good series.
Probably the top five first round matchup.
This is the best first round I think I've seen since the Celtics played the Bulls in 2009.
That is the best first round ever. That was a sweet.
Because that was like every game went to overtime.
Or double overtime sometimes.
Triple. Game six went triple OT. Never going to forget it. But
it was a wild series.
That game was unbelievable just for the people involved, too, not just the fact that it was, you know, it came down to a buzzer beater in Game 7. I mean, Chris Paul saved his legacy in that shot. You know, Blake Griffin's grown into a legit, full-blown superstar delivering in the playoffs, and we might have seen the last of Manu and Tim Duncan. I mean, you think
I'm not crying.
All that happened in one game. Defending champs out, Clippers growing up and playing big. I mean, All that stuff is huge.
What can you say about Chris Paul, too? Popping the hammy, then coming back and hitting the game winner.
Yeah, right.
That's
a fucking absurd shot that never should have gone in. It's just a testament to how clutch
a tad on the offensive foul side.
It's almost like the powers of me, whatever you want to call it, luck or you know whatever it is. It's like
still a great shot.
It was a reward for him just literally fighting through it and giving 110%.
Oh, yeah.
Through, I mean, just think about it. I mean, like, basketball might be the most physically draining sport. Out of the ones that are treasured, you know, here in this country. I mean, football, and you know, you got hockey, you got baseball, and you got basketball. I mean, there are other sports, but those are the four, you know, major ones. That might be the most physically draining one out of all of them, because it's constant left, right. I mean, back and forth. So to do that on a hamstring injury that fresh just happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's literally just happened during the game. It's not that it happened. Oh, it happened in practice, you know, a couple hours ago, or it happened, you know, yesterday, or anything like that. Like it was fresh. So the fact that he played through it and got his team the W, not saying that anybody else didn't contribute, but that shot's what got him the W in the end.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty incredible.
And, I mean, when he pulled the hamstring, I can't remember who said it. I don't know if it was you, Steve, but somebody in our room was just like, well, that's it for the Clippers season. Like, I mean, I think we all thought it was over for them. They can't win without Paul. And they hung in there without him. He came in and closed the deal. And, I mean, just shot it, I mean, inches away from Tim Duncan's fingertips. Mm-hmm. I mean, crazy. I got to say, I feel bad. If Tim Duncan retires,
he won't.
If he does, though, it's rough that his last moment was missing a game-saving block by inches. Like, that's rough. 5 years ago, he blocks the shit out of that.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I think he won't retire is because he doesn't want to retire on that.
Yeah, I think that's true. And he's still balling. He was their best player in the series.
Yeah, if it had ended with like a 20-point blowout, like the Clips won with the 20, like by 20, maybe we could talk about the idea, but
yeah.
Duncan's still healthy. Like, they know how to monitor his minutes correctly.
Yep.
They know when to sit him out for certain games during the regular season. There's no way he's not playing next year.
Right, and he played great that whole series against Griffin and Jordan.
Oh, he was fantastic.
I mean, he was by far the Spurs' best player.
And Patty Mills.
And if he comes back, I think he knows damn well he's not getting another ring. Because look at all these teams in the West that are on the rise. That are going to be even tougher next year. I mean, look. I mean, and the Spurs are on the decline. Individual players on the Spurs are on the decline. The only one who's really pointing up is Kawhi. Patty Mills, too.
Yep.
I mean, what happened to...
I would have said Green, but he fell apart.
Oh, my God, did he fall apart.
To be fair, though, here's why they lost that series, and I'm taking nothing away from the Clippers. Tony Parker was not right in that series. Tony Parker played hurt. His stats were horrible. He couldn't slash into the lane. And guys like Danny Green get their threes like every great spot-up three-point shooter gets, because the guard penetrates, the defense sags, they kick it out to them.
But he had a lot of open opportunities. He did, but... He could have ended a couple games if he had just hit a couple.
It's true, but the thing is, like, shooters like him need to get a rhythm going. He had a lot of contested shots he missed. He went cold. He was off rhythm. I mean, listen, no excuses. The guy should have made more shots than he did, but the combination of Parker being hurt and not getting his shot, like, I think that hurt the whole team.
The Tiago injury didn't help either.
No, the Spurs didn't... I mean, that's why Griffin was able to smash him inside like he did. Yeah. They just couldn't protect the rim as normal.
Yeah, but I mean, as banged up as they were, I mean, they dominated the Clips in game two. I mean, that was a manhandling right there.
The three, right?
Was it game three? No, the game two when they literally just bitch slapped the Clips around.
That was three, right? When they beat him by 27?
Game
one was won by the Clips. Game two was won by the Spurs. Game three was won by the Clips.
Game two was the one the Clips fumbled away. Remember, they had like a meltdown. Blake Griffin did the spin move.
Oh no, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Okay, so when they did go apeshit, you know, they did have that performance where they were playing lights out basketball.
Right. That was mainly because of Kawhi going nuts.
Yeah. But I mean, look at what Chris Paul did injured.
Oh no, it's true. Well, listen, Chris Paul is better than Tony Parker. But I mean, you know,
I don't know if you can use that as an excuse, because
reason
why they lost, because the bench on the Spurs there are a lot of players who can do more damage than Tony Parker can at this age right now.
Right, but all we're saying is that if you play with two of your integral pieces hurt, that is a reason why you part of a reason why you.
The Spurs were hurt. That was definitely a reason.
Pop play Tony Parker? By the way, he played him a lot, a couple games, didn't he? Like only when it started to become very, very obvious that okay, this isn't something you can play through. This is something that's really going to just fuck up his game. That's when he started. I think that wasn't until like game four, really. Game four or game five, when Pop finally realized, okay, you know what, this isn't something he's going to be able to play through. Because he played him, I think, for like, you know, 32 minutes, 34 minutes, something like that, and you could tell that Tony was just off. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Off. Yeah. And Pop kept on playing him. And I guess it's just one of those situations where you hope maybe, you know, your player's in a funk and maybe your teammates can rally him together and kind of get some energy going. But it just wasn't the case. So, that being said, going back to Tim Duncan retiring or not retiring, I don't know. I don't know what he's going to do. I don't know what the three of them are going to do.
Well, Parker's not retiring, but Ginobili's out.
Well, think about it. I mean, if Ginobili's out and then Tim Duncan decides to go out, do you really think Tony Parker's going to want to play without the two of them there? Probably. Maybe he wants his money. But I'm just saying, it'd be freaking weird. If they all decide to come back for one last hurrah, they know they're not going to the finals, man. I mean, there's too many younger teams. They're just playing better and better and better and better. Look at this. Look at right now the Rockets and the Clips. Look at the way these guys are playing. They're playing physical, tough, fast basketball. And the Spurs this series looked slow as hell. They look injuries, of course, have something to do with it. But even at 100% with their age,
Steve really wants the Spurs to be gone, people. Yeah, that's what we can read into this.
And they will be gone. I mean, they will be. If it's not this season, it'll be next season.
Steve is ready for the dynasty.
We've been hearing this for about 6 years about the Spurs. But, I mean, listen, I'm with you. The Spurs looked old and tired in that series. They were on their last legs. But part of that also has to do with the fact they played the full postseason last year and had the shorter layover. When you got an older team, that wears on you.
Yep.
Yeah, they also had to play, you know, the full season like everybody else too. I mean, and I think they are the not in terms of franchise, but in terms of players on the court, they are the oldest team in the NBA.
Oh, I'm sure they are.
I mean, I'm trying to think of teams right now that have a core guys that are older than they are.
I don't think it's close. I think it's definitely Spurs.
It's got to be the Spurs.
Yeah.
So to go through another 82 game season, yep, then go through the playoffs, it's just like, ugh. I mean, from what you guys are saying, Tim Duncan's not going to, you know, retire off this because he doesn't want his legacy to end, you know, by a 2-point shot. Well, you know what?
We'll see.
It's either just take it like there, or hey, who knows how it's going to end in the future, man? Do you really want to lose by two, or do you want to lose in a blowout? I mean, both of them suck.
I don't, really, I don't listen.
He's just too healthy, I don't think.
I don't think Tim Duncan is going to come back because of that shot. I just think he's going to come back.
Yeah.
And I think it would be a shame if he ended on that, but I don't think that's really factoring into his decision, you know?
Dan Marino ended on a 62-7 loss to Jacksonville, so.
Well, he never won Jack, did he? So,
put up record numbers, man. He's in the Hall of Fame for a reason. But anyway, yeah, I mean, this, my opinion, this is the end of the Spurs as we know it.
Oh, it's definitely the end of the Spurs. I just don't think it's the end of Tim Duncan.
Even if he's at 100%.
I'd be shocked if the Spurs won the championship.
He got hammered after that game.
They all
did. Oh, that clip on TMZ.
They got
him carrying Aaron Baines.
They got smoked. Respect to them, by the way.
Respect to them.
Oh, no. Absolutely. They knew it was over, too. They're like, well, that's end of an era. Let's go get ham.
I like it. I like it. I like the move rather than just getting separate flights. I thought it was awesome
watching those geezers get freaking pickled.
But yeah, funny. Now that's set us up for quite a few good more NBA playoff showdowns. Absolutely. I don't know if you want to touch on that or.
I mean, we can. They're already going. I don't really see.
Yeah, I mean, I just
think... Huge reason to do predictions or anything.
No, not in the way of predicting. I just think it's noteworthy that the Clips are looking so good without Chris Paul still. I mean, that's just unbelievable.
Because they're red hot.
And how about the Grizzlies getting the job done last night in Golden State?
Conley coming back, Master Venture, no.
That was a big MVP struggle.
Though, I'll tell you, I do need... I really do need the Grizzlies and the Rockets to not win just because I want the Clippers-Warriors... Western Conference Finals, because that would be just an absolute war.
That's what everybody is hoping for, I think.
Those guys hate each other. I think we talked about this last week. That's Seahawks-Niners. Those guys hate each other's guts, and they're both playing, I think, the best basketball in the West right now.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, but last year they went to a seven-game series.
Great seven games, and with all that Donald Sterling hype going on at the same time. That was another great first-round series.
Yeah, it was.
They'll be up in there, top three.
Oh, that's something really quick. How cool is it to see Steve Ballmer getting into these games? He's got to be one of the greatest personalities.
He's adorable.
He's super funny to watch. Like you just look at where the state of the team was given the Donald Sterling thing. It seems so, because the NBA was so swift in its, you know, retribution against Donald Sterling. And the way that, you know, they really went about, you know, having Steve Ballmer take over the team, it seems so super. Like,
oh yeah,
super far away now. And I just wanted to point out that it's also fun, just as a fan of sports in general. You know, it's cool for the Clippers fans that, you know, they've not only gotten to, you know, see some good postseason basketball, that the ride isn't over just yet, and. It seems like it's a fun time right now in the Staples Center.
Clippers got a happy ending, and more power to them. I mean, that was a horrible situation, and now they got a team that's playing great and an owner that doesn't suck.
Who's enthusiastic.
Oh, yeah.
Who very genuinely
There's something about guys named Steve in basketball. I don't know who it is.
You mean Steve Nash?
They don't sit much when they're watching
No, they don't sit much at all.
They do a lot of pacing.
Their voice gets really intense.
Yeah, Ballmer, man. What I would give to be the two people that sit on his left and right. It's got to be an experience.
Well, I mean, think about how good it is for the players. Yeah. To see the guy who owns your team on, like, freaking out about what you're doing.
And, like, right under the hoop, too.
Yeah, like, literally, like, cheering you on and getting freaked out and getting excited about what you're doing, how you're playing. I mean, that's got to make you really want to play for the guy, just so you don't let him down, you know, just... To see him get excited like that. I mean, you look at Paul Allen during Trailblazers games, he looks like he just, you know, woke up from the dead.
Absolutely. Infectious atmosphere.
Yeah, for sure.
All right.
What's next, Papa Bear?
Let's move on. We got a lot to talk about for the draft, so let's just get trivia out of the way real quick. If I recall correctly, you guys are all tied up.
We are.
I believe you all missed last week's question.
I think we're like 0-3 in our last like three.
Pretty sure you are. It's not going well right now.
They're 0-5.
They're not good anymore.
They're not good anymore.
Let me pull up this question real quick.
I really hope it has something to do with a sport that I know.
It does.
Yes!
NFL question.
Oh, yeah!
All right, guys. What quarterback threw 70 passes in a single game?
Completed passes or attempts?
Just attempts.
I was like going to say completed. I don't know.
damn.
Is it A, Dan Marino, B, John Elway, C, Drew Bledsoe, or D, Trent Dilfer?
Oh, God. I really hope it's not Dilfer.
Dan Marino.
Okay.
Going with his 84 season.
So it was Dan the Man, John Elway,
Drew Bledsoe, Trent Dilfer.
Yeah, I'm going with Dan Marino.
Okay.
I'm like tempted to be a jerk here and just go with Marino so even the field, but for whatever reason, I think it's Bledsoe.
70 passes. Damn.
That's Marino all day.
Yeah, I like what you said. Yeah, I'm going with Marino. I think 84 actually is right. That was like throw heavy.
Okay.
Dope. Yeah.
Like that was the year where he just went off. Like he just like him and Shula, you know, that off.
Right, and I mean I don't remember them having much of a running back either, so I feel like
they never did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man. Guys. You guys have just fallen off, man.
Sweet.
I really thought I didn't know if Steve was gonna get this, but I really thought you Christian and you, Drew, are going to get this.
Oh, no, is it Bledsoe?
Drew Bledsoe?
God damn it.
And it happened against the Minnesota Vikings.
Oh.
Yep. God, yeah, we had Bledsoe.
Well, I don't blame Drew. He doesn't want to remember that shit.
He was 45 for 70.
Was Bledsoe on the Pats at the time?
Yes.
Jesus.
Yeah, how the fuck did. What, yeah, Jesus.
I have no idea.
I'm the Pats fan for Bledsoe. I mean, I barely knew what was going on when he was the QB.
So, yeah, you all got it wrong. Well, good job, guys.
Ah, pissed me off.
You're on a roll right now.
Bledsoe would have been my other guess, too. I didn't think it was Elway.
Try to pick something for you guys next week so we can get out of this slump. Because, yeah, you guys are still tied, and I want to see someone take the damn lead.
Indeed.
Yeah, wow, I really thought you guys were going to get that question. Okay, let's move on to the NFL draft.
Yes.
Oh, man.
So, again, if you live under a rock and didn't pay attention to anything that happened last week... the entire 2015 NFL draft happened in Chicago this past week. Don't have time to go through every single pick, obviously.
Darn it!
You want to go through 256? We can go through all 256 picks, right?
Yeah!
All right, let's do it. No, we're not doing that.
Oh, God.
So I'm going to let everyone just talk about their teams for a minute and just how you guys feel about... the picks you guys made, how you guys feel overall about your team after the draft. But first, let's just get into a couple of the notable picks. Obviously, we all knew it. At number one, Jameis Winston from Florida State went to Tampa Bay.
Boo.
Do we really need to talk about it? All I need to say is that he's still clearly an idiot because as soon as he got drafted, he tweeted out a picture of crab legs.
Seriously, why?
Are you a fucking moron?
Yes, he is, but it's just like, why would you even, like, it's just, hey, in case you were wondering if he was still immature, ding, 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 yep, still is.
I would already be panicking
they
if
need
I was Tampa
to, they
The guy's completely unapologetic, and it would be a lot easier if it wasn't just the darn crab legs he's been able to get away with, too.
Well, the front office, whether they think they do or don't, they need to get him a handler.
Like, I hope they go,
in the same way
that... I hope the Bucs go down in flames.
In the same way that Jerry Jones put together... you know, like a personal advising team for Dez Bryant, the Buccaneers should be doing that for Jameis Winston.
Agreed.
If they really, really, truly care about their investment and making sure that he doesn't do anything stupid on the regular. Because it just seems like if there's no one there, like if there's no one there professionally speaking, because his family doesn't seem to think this is an issue, that's who he was surrounded by all day. So,
yeah, they thought it was funny.
So clearly this isn't something they find to be... particularly a big deal.
Alarming.
Well, and that's what I'm saying is, and that's why I'm pointing to the Jerry Jones Dez Bryant situation is because you know it's, you know I'm not one to judge, but it's fairly clear that Dez Bryant's family situation isn't super spectacular, and so Jerry Jones felt the need to surround Mr. Bryant with some professional career advisors. Or whatever you want to call them, I think Jameis Winston is going to need the same professional help
because
he can't take care of his image.
Horrible.
He doesn't want to, he doesn't surround himself with people who do.
Nope.
I think he's going down in flames. I give. I just. I. And you know what? I don't wish ill will on pretty much anyone, but if I hope this kid gets what he deserves, because he's gotten away with too much. I'm sorry, he's gotten away with too much. I argue all you want that he's still young, he's just a kid, he's 21 years old. I don't give a goddamn. When I was 21, I was doing stupid shit, but I wasn't hurting anyone or stealing anything or. I'm tired of using someone's youth as an excuse.
I'm sorry. I'm with you. And listen, I mean, you're right. You should never wish harm on someone. Deep down inside me, I just hope somebody Theismann's the guy. I mean, I don't want to see him on a football field. I want to see him getting millions. I don't want to see him as any kind of possibility for as a role model for young people.
And clearly his family doesn't have any issue with what he's been doing. So I don't think they deserve that.
They raised the kid.
Yeah, I don't think they deserve any of the I don't think they deserve to reap the benefits of this kid if they're not willing to whip him into shape.
Yep. Yep. Let's talk about the nice quarterback.
Yeah, let's go number two, which we all kind of figured again. We just didn't know if it would be to this team. Quarterback Marcus Mariota.
Pulling a Roger Goodell on
He's angling for NFL Mariotta.
At least I pronounced all the syllables.
Marcus Mariota, man. All right,
well, yeah.
What'd you say, Goodell?
Marcus went to the Tennessee Titans. There was talk for days that maybe Cleveland was going to trade their first two-round picks. San Diego was trade Phillip Rivers and get Mariota at number two. And then I guess it came out that Chip Kelly ended up making a huge push for Marcus.
Did you see?
Even offering two first-round picks, another pick, and Sam Bradford for him in Tennessee.
Right. Oh, there was more than that. It was more than that. I'm bringing it up right now. Like, it was insane. I can't believe. If what was leaked was leaked, and Tennessee didn't say if it is true and Tennessee still said no, I'm trying to find it. I'm shocked, because I would have pulled the trigger on it. No question. Here, let's see if I can find it.
Clearly like what they saw in the combine.
Well, that's the thing. Is like, he has the intangibles. There's no question that Mariota is smart. He is a great off-the-field kid. You don't have to worry about him. You don't need a leash for him or anything like that. The main thing with him isn't really the athleticism or his ability. It's that he plays and has always played within the confines of a very strict system. A system that very few offenses run in the NFL, one of them being Philadelphia.
And a system that, when you think about it, has produced very few highly successful, if any, position players from Oregon. Like, think of who's come out of Oregon that's really made waves in the NFL. You won't think of anyone.
No.
I mean, LeGarrette Blount's the only kid I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah, but he wasn't really part of... He also wasn't that... but he also wasn't part of that system, really. I mean, they hadn't really instituted that offense for him. I mean, he's a power back, not one of those speed backs.
I found... So this is supposedly what Philly offered in full. Two first rounders, a third rounder, Fletcher Cox, the team's best defensive player, Brandon Boykin, a nickel corner, Sam Bradford, the starting quarterback, and Michael Kendricks, linebacker. All that from Mariota.
Oh, man. Chelsea!
How do you not say...
Oh, I didn't realize
you
gave him that.
No, seriously. That's supposedly what Philly offered. Are you serious?
That's crazy.
If that's real...
Tennessee wanted more.
If that's... Then you really... Then Ken Whisenhunt must think that this kid is the second coming of Andrew Luck.
This guy needs...
I'm not kidding.
This guy needs to be all pro in 3 years to make
I would
worth
have,
it.
I probably... If that's I crazy. Am a general manager, I would take two first rounders, a third... And a bunch of starters. Man. Take it, no question.
Yeah.
They wanted more.
It's puzzling. They must really have liked what they saw.
Must have.
Out of this kid.
It'll be interesting to see how it develops.
And yet the one complaint I've heard out of Tennessee about him is that he's quiet. They said they didn't like his personality, and they didn't think that being a leader was, quote-unquote, I believe it was natural to him.
Well,
to be fair, it's not just Tennessee saying that. A good amount of NFL analysts have said that. They've just been like, he's a great kid, but he's not a leader. He's too quiet. He's a little bit too reserved. Like, you even saw him, like, You even saw him sitting with his family. It didn't look like he was, like, really, like, engaging anyone. Like, I know he was nervous, but, like, still. Like, you saw Jameis, like, laughing and, like, smiling and, like, talking with his family even before he got picked. Like, you didn't see Marcus was just really quiet. And to me, I don't really think that means anything.
I agree.
I'm just making an argument for why these analysts seem to feel that way. As long as he can go out and throw the ball, get along with his teammates, and make his teammates look good, he's going to be fine.
Sounds like a lot of people felt that way about Teddy.
Well, yeah, it's bullshit. I mean, like, all that matters is, you know, going out into the field. As long as you got the passion, the enthusiasm, and the leadership on the field, who gives a shit how you are? Yeah, I mean,
guy played four years of college football, won the Heisman Trophy, went to the national championship game being quiet. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it really doesn't matter.
If he's vocal or not. I'm sure Tennessee can find some locker room mouths.
If he's on the field and he's... guys, I don't know what we should do. Yeah, then it's a problem. But, I mean, then it's a problem. But if you're on the field and you're rallying the troops together, you know what? Who cares? If he doesn't want to talk to anybody in his private life, he doesn't have to.
That should not be anyone's biggest concern. The biggest concern should be that he's never run a pro-style offense.
That's exactly. Right. Which shocks me, because that's what... Because this means, in some way, Ken Whisenhunt is going to need to adapt his offensive philosophy. Because he doesn't... I mean, unless he is a firm believer that Mariota can adapt and learn, that he can mold and change that part of his game, he has to. Because he can't... It just shocks me, because when, like, you look at the offenses and the quarterbacks that have run in Ken Whisenhunt, like, they've been pocket guys, big-bodied pocket guys that, you know, they don't really move, like Kurt Warner.
Yeah.
I mean, those sorts of things. Carson Palmer, like, guys that just sit, stay, and fire. Mariota is not really, that is not what he ran at Oregon at all. So, I'm honestly shocked they hung onto the pick. If that is supposedly what Philadelphia was offering them, I'm shocked Philadelphia didn't pull the
trigger. Tyler, can I ask you a question real quick?
Yeah.
For you guys, who do you think is going to be the bigger contributor with what they have on their team in their rookie year, Winston or Mariota?
I think it should be Jameis, because Mike Evans and Jameis Winston should shred. They should. If Winston is supposed to be, because, like, Tennessee outside of Mariota, what do they got? Nothing.
Well, I heard they drafted some weapons for him in this draft, but obviously, you know, I mean, it's preferred to have veteran talent for some, or especially a rookie to throw
can't
at.
Can't name you one wide receiver that's playing in Tennessee.
Neither can I. That's why I was asking, see if you guys knew more than I did.
Honestly, right now, at this point, the only offensive player I can even remotely name on the Titans are their quarterbacks. The fact that Jameis is coming in with... The rookie class's season before is second best receiver in Mike Evans, right behind Odell Beckham Jr. He should, and if Winston is good as we say he is, or as good as the scouts suggest, I think he should have more of an impact much quicker.
At number four, Derek Carr has a wide receiver.
He's Cooper!
Amari Cooper, the wideout from Alabama, went to Oakland. Great pick.
He looks super fired up about being an Oakland Raider.
I would be too.
He looked super bummed.
Well, he'll be okay when he signs that contract.
Oh, for sure.
Check.
Absolutely.
And that signing bonus. Yeah, it's a great pick. It finally gives Derek Carr a truly, truly skilled young wide receiver that he didn't have last year. Raiders still have an insane amount of work to do to be anywhere near relevant, but at least this gives the kid, Derek, gives the kid a little bit, like, gives him someone to throw.
It's a great start. Yeah, I think it really is. I mean, I think that, you know, I mean, the Raiders have some young players on defense that are going to develop. I mean, obviously, they're not even going to sniff the playoffs, but, I mean, I think it's a good start. I think Carr is a good quarterback. I think Cooper was definitely the best receiver in the draft, and that's, you know, that's something, you know?
Yeah, agreed. I want Steve and I to be able to gloat for a minute, so let's go ahead and mention at number seven, my favorite wide receiver coming out of the draft, Mr. Kevin White, was taken by the Chicago Bears. The reason I say I wanted Steve and I to be able to gloat for a minute is because if you recall, our former host and obviously still current friend, Matt Konopka, argued with us for weeks that the Chicago Bears were not going to take a wide receiver, even after Brandon Marshall was traded to the Jets. And Steve and I spent countless nights and hours trying to convince him that we were firm in our stance that Chicago was going to take a wide receiver. And, well, what do you know, Steve? You and I are geniuses, as we always are.
Well, I mean, like, think about it. I mean, Brandon Marshall left. I mean, you need another person to throw to. And I love – even John Gruden was like, no, defense all day. I was like, well, hey, maybe we were wrong. Maybe they are going defense.
I didn't budge for a minute. Kevin White was too good to pass up. And after Amari Cooper – like, if Amari Cooper hadn't gone off, they would have taken Amari Cooper. But obviously he was going. And I was like, there's just no way they're going to pass up on a talent like Kevin White.
And they, yeah, so now, I mean, still, I mean, listen, he still got, you know, the trash can throwing balls at him. So he still got the trash can with the number six on him throwing balls at him.
He's cursed with a season full of cutlery.
If everyone listening, if you don't understand what Steve's referring to, please just Google Jay Cutler trash can, and you will find an image of Jay Cutler as a trash can. Giving a post game interview on the field, and I'll just tell you, it's just the greatest.
I mean,
it's the greatest.
It's not
I've
fair
ever
to
seen.
That trash can. That trash can had personality.
At least the trash can has use.
It does have use. Yeah, it does. And it doesn't throw your garbage at other people.
Jeez,
it doesn't.
That the buck stops at the can.
That was a good one. Wow. I don't have anything else to say about the Bears. Number 10, bye-bye Zach Stacy, because Todd Gurley was taken by the Rams. It's already been confirmed that he will at least be out for the month of September, maybe even the first half of October. They've already assessed him and said that there's no way he's back for the first game of the season.
Thank God. I get one game without him. That's great.
Yeah, great kid, great player, obviously has dealt with some major injury problems. I believe most people in this room / in the United States were very surprised to see him go this high, especially since Melvin Gordon didn't go until 21.
I would say because it was just a relatively low-key first round compared to drafts past, I would say that was the surprise of the first round. I would say probably... Yeah. The big one, anyways.
Oh, absolutely. Well, my only... It's that and the fact that Tennessee kept their pick. That was my biggest surprise.
That's true.
Yeah, Todd Gurley was right up there, too. Yeah, so now we can go ahead and get into our teams a little bit. We'll start over with you, Mr. Willers. At number 11, your Minnesota Vikings drafted cornerback Trey Waynes. Three Waynes, who was a three-star recruit coming out of high school, by the way. It's literally nothing.
He might, but I would hope more stars, but that works for me.
That
was the guy I wanted. I was pretty happy about it. PA, Mr. Paul Allen, play-by-play radio announcer for the Minnesota Vikings, also called it. I thought after the Bears took Kevin White, it was even more imperative then to either take... to take a defensive back or to take an offensive lineman. There was no offensive lineman worth taking at the 11 spots, so you take, what a lot of people would argue was probably the second best corner in the draft. He's, 6'2", he's physical, does a little bit of holding, but I don't know. I'm at the point now where I just saw what Zimmer was able to do, head coach Mike Zimmer was able to do with a guy like Xavier Rhodes in molding him and teaching him technique and how to play the corner position in the way that Zimmer wants him to. At the end of the day, we play in the NFC North, and the NFC North has Randall Cobb, Jordy Nelson, Calvin Johnson, Alshon Jeffrey. Now it's got Kevin White. That's a lot of really good receivers.
Kevin White is so excited to be included on that list.
But I'm just saying, like, I'm just looking. I meant not just from – I listed those guys not even just from, like, skill standpoint, but just – raw athleticism.
Oh, yeah.
Like there are some just absolute athletic freaks playing the receiver position in this division, and it's imperative. And at the end of the day, the Green Bay Packers are the best team in the division, and the way that they got there is through an amazing passing attack. The best way that you're going to beat them is to neutralize that, and trying to get another physical corner that's not going to be afraid to go and battle Cobb or Nelson or whoever he's got to cover. Is a big part of it. And then, I guess, as far as later rounds go, was super happy to see that we pulled in Kendrick, what's his name? The kid that was Anthony Barr's former roommate in college. He's going to be playing linebacker now. That was a big need that we needed to address. So those two guys have played together before. They're going to sounds like they're going to be playing right next to each other. And then we also took a kid named Clemmings, who was an offensive guard who should have gone in the first round, apparently, but plummeted all the way down to round number 4 and supposedly had a foot injury. That's not an issue, but everybody said it was an issue. That's why nobody went for him. Sounds like he could replace Matt Khalil if he pans out, which would be great for Vikings fans because we don't really like Matt Khalil because he's poopy at his job. So I was happy with the draft. It was surprisingly low-key for a Vikings fan. After having the draft we had last year and then the draft the year before where we had, you know, we had 2 first-rounders last year and then 3 the year before, and the way we got them was a lot of draft, like day one trading and swapping, so it was really exciting to have them just sit at 11 and take their guy. Was nice, and it looks like we're probably going to have Adrian Peterson next year.
All right. So I made a mistake a minute ago. Just wasn't thinking. When I mentioned Melvin Gordon, I said he went at 20 or 21. Of course he didn't go then because at 15, which was originally, Steve, your San Francisco 49ers pick, you guys ended up trading down to the San Diego Chargers. You took the number 17 pick, and they came up and grabbed Melvin Gordon.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It sounds like they were a bit worried that the Houston Texans were going to take him at 16. I didn't really see that because
Arian Foster,
exactly. But I don't know. You never know. They could have been wanting to draft for the future. That's fair. I think it's a good pickup for San Diego, and it's definitely better for Melvin Gordon. But at 17, which is the pick that you took, you drafted defensive tackle Arik Armstead out of Oregon.
Good pick.
So how do you feel? How do you feel about your draft overall?
Really underwhelmed. Really disappointed. You know what I did actually was when everything was all said and done, except for Arik actually, but for everybody else that got drafted, I decided to wait until the entire draft was over and then wait for a complete list of everybody that got drafted onto the Niners. And then what I would do is I'd go onto YouTube. If they had highlights for those particular players or they had any footage of them playing, I would watch it. And then from that footage, me myself, I would say, okay, is this gonna work? Is it not gonna work? What do I think? And then I would compare it to what the ESPN analyst would say. And surprisingly, a lot of the stuff I saw, I mean, I wasn't too impressed by, but a lot of analysts, most analysts, I should say, I'd say 70% of them that actually graded how we drafted, they said we did excellent. I'm still not convinced. The question always looms of how you're going to play in the NFL. Because, I mean, how you play in college, it's one thing. How you play in the NFL with grown men, that's another thing entirely. I'm not impressed at all with what we drafted. Excuse me, who we drafted. And
they're people.
They are people. They are people. So I'm not overly impressed with who we drafted. Arik, and then the two words I kept hearing the most in terms of describing draft picks, prospect and project. Those are the two words I kept hearing the most. And from watching all these guys, the one that I kept thinking was we drafted all projects.
See, but that's not bad. I don't think that's bad because if when you draft projects, it all depends on your head coach. And you don't know anything yet. You don't.
Thing good I can say about that, though, now that you bring it up, since Tom Sula is a defensive-minded coach and a defensive line coach, I'd say 80% of the people we did draft initially for their positions are defense.
I was going to say.
I'm not concerned about that, but I'm just concerned about what those players that I saw have to go up against, especially in the NFC West.
That's a good point. I guess the way that I look at it now is, I don't know, Mike Zimmer was the first head coach that I've seen that the first coach that I've seen, being a Vikings fan, that has taken over the team and doesn't have like a scheme in mind. He takes the players that he has, looks at what they do well, and then tries to put them in the best possible situation to make plays. So I don't think it's necessarily bad to do the project thing. It can be a lot tougher when you've got a set system thing, and that's the thing. Do you know if Tom Sula has a system in mind? Are they running the 3-4 the way they
have?
They are
running the 3-4, yes.
So he knows that, it probably means that he's going to want a guy like Armstead, who I've heard is a really, really good pass rushing defensive tackle.
He's not just a run plugger. He's not just a big body. That guy will get up the field.
Well, that's what the, that's what he loved about him, is how aggressive he plays and how nasty he plays and how effortless he is, at least in the tapes, how effortless he is in doing what he does. So that's fine. I mean, that whatever. I mean, like, listen, I was kind of hoping we could get some more weapons for Cap. I really was. We drafted a running back. And actually, here's an interesting thing. In the undrafted free agents, we drafted a quarterback with the intent of turning him into a tight end. So I have to keep reminding myself, like what you just said, I have to keep reminding myself, just because they were drafted at a certain position doesn't necessarily mean, first of all, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to make the 53-man roster. Second of all, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be playing the position they were drafted in. No. They could be both. I mean,
Sherman. Richard Sherman.
Yeah, Richard Sherman. I mean, who knows? I mean, in practice, they could see them doing something they like. One thing we need is cornerbacks. That's what I was really disappointed on. Just getting to the core of it, we needed cornerbacks. We did not draft any cornerbacks, and that freaked me out. When you need something, you need it. I mean, Parrish Cox gone. I mean, Chris Culliver gone. I mean, like, all we have is Jimmy Ward, and he's got a broken foot. You need something, and now you're drafting, you know, tight ends. You're drafting you drafted two receivers, defensive linemen, offensive linemen. You know, all these guys. It's like, I don't see one cornerback here.
I had heard, though, that it was not a very deep draft for defensive backs this year. That most of the guys you wanted, you were going to want right away, and then anybody after that. I mean, roster spots are valuable, and you guys have lots of. You had a lot, or you lost two guys in your front seven to retirement. I mean, you need to find a way to bolster that back up, too.
No, absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's so many needs. So many needs.
When, if you look at the receivers that you're going to be playing in the NFC West, you're not playing against anybody super, super knockout.
Don't let Doug Baldwin hear you say that.
Doug Baldwin, I don't think that you're a very awesome, spectacular wide receiver. I think you're a competent, average starter.
Well, now you said
earned your own personal Doug Baldwin
There's two threats. Graham now. And Fitz.
But I mean, you could say Graham. I don't think there's any defensive back that can run with it. And I'm very meh with Fitz now. I love Fitz, but Fitz is
still needs, not what still needs to be guarded.
And then it sounds like the Cards are trying to skedaddle the old what was it? They're trying to move Malcolm Floyd now, supposedly.
Yup.
Well, it's like Jim Tobsula said, we are strong in the defense. We just got stronger, so we'll see. That's all I have to say. All
right, I'm just going to take a quick minute on my Indianapolis Colts. But first, I wanted to – this is interesting. I'm just realizing this. Steve, correct me if I'm wrong, but you went to St. Thomas Aquinas School in
– I did not. I went to Cardinal Gibbons. But that,
you have a shirt that says St. Thomas Aquinas, don't you?
I don't. I feel like I – my sister might have been wearing one. I would never wear that.
Well,
trash.
At 29, all right. Well,
Steve's just a big fan of scholasticism. That's all.
More because at 29, my Indianapolis Colts drafted a wide receiver, Philip Dorsett, out of Miami University, and he went to high school at Fort Lauderdale St. Thomas Aquinas.
Yeah, fuck. Well, then we already know what kind of person he is.
Yeah, I just thought that was interesting. For some reason,
it's okay. Blair Walsh from Cardinal Gibbons went onto the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah.
Well, for some reason, I thought you had.
They're our biggest rival. Like, I mean, okay. Yeah, they're our biggest rival.
I gotcha.
We just can't win against them.
All right. Well, yeah. Long story short, everyone, especially me, is just puzzled by this pick. It just didn't make any sense why we would need to take a wide receiver after adding two wide receivers in the offseason in Daron Carter, son of Chris Carter, and Andre Johnson, obviously, from the Texans. It just doesn't make sense. The more and more I thought about it, I racked my brain for days, and I realized why it actually probably makes sense, and it's for the worst reason I could possibly think of. Because next year, well, this coming year, is a contract year for T.Y.,
ooh.
And I have a sinking feeling we're not going to pay him what he deserves.
Brutal. That's brutal.
So we got the guy to watch him do what he does for a year, and then to come in and be that guy.
It's actually smart.
It makes me super nervous and super sad because I'm not.
Talk
I'm not
about
down with
win
it.
Now with the Colts. My God.
See,
you
I
guys are all in.
Pagano coached him, didn't he? Isn't that what you told me? Someone told me that.
Nah, anybody who's come out of college now,
Pagano. Well, so, Pagano, or he came from a school that Pagano chucked, or excuse, sorry, it came from a school that Pagano coached at?
Was he at Miami for a while?
I can't remember. I don't think he was the head coach.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't matter. It was a puzzling pick until you think about it from
it's a good move.
From that business angle. I don't like it. I want T.Y. for 5 or 6 more years. But, I'm just not down.
But at the rate that T.Y.'s going, he's headed for big money in free agency, and you still got to pay. Well, you still got to pay Andrew Luck because they still haven't given him their biggest deal ever, which is what they plan to do. So
if they want help up front, they're going to have to clear up some cash.
So you might as well just say, "All right, T.Y., go get your money somewhere else. We love you. Bye bye." And then hang on to this rookie, pick up his 5th year option if it pans out. But it doesn't really hurt you that bad because if you look at the depth chart, you got Dante Moncrief, you got AJ, you've got Dron Carter if he pans out. As well, you still got Fleener and Dwayne Allen. I don't think it hurts. I think it's a smart move. And then I think if you wanted to,
I think all the guys you just named could easily not pan out this year. Dante Moncrief doesn't know how to run routes. Daron Carter is unproven. AJ is old. I love him, but he's old, and he's not nearly as explosive as he was 3 years ago. Kobe can't catch the ball. Dwayne Allen gets hurt. T.Y. is our one guy that you know you can rely on him game in and game out. Right. And if you know you can't rely on him to actually catch the ball, you can rely on him to be a decoy so someone else can go catch the ball.
Right.
And it just worries me that we're planning for his departure.
Yeah. Well, you know, you never know. They might, you know, make some different moves, but, you know.
Chuck Pagano was involved with University of Miami for a while.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But I don't know. Probably was like fucking.
Sure. But I mean, you know, he knows.
15 years ago.
Yeah. I didn't want to get too much else into it. I'm cool with the rest of the picks we made. We made 5 defensive picks, which is fantastic. That's what we need mostly. We got a 4th corner finally. We got DeJuan Smith out of Florida Atlantic University. He'll be, from what I've been reading, he's a great young defensive back. It'll be great to have him as a backup in case Vontae Davis or Greg Toler goes down. Besides that, we took Henry Anderson, a defensive end out of Stanford. I like anyone right now who comes from Stanford because clearly those kids can ball. Andrew Luck, to a somewhat degree, Kobe Fleener when he wants to have hands.
Who are those guys?
Jordan Richards.
Andrew Luck was throwing passes at Richard Sherman in college.
Who?
Right?
Who?
Andrew Luck.
Who?
Andrew Luck.
Who?
Dude, we're not actually serious. No, I'm just fucking with
it, no. But didn't Harbaugh coached Andrew Luck?
No, yeah, yes, you're right. Yes,
but
no,
he was throwing passes at Richard Sherman.
Yes, we are. I'm just messing
with you. Answer the question. Yes, don't just stare at
me. You know the answer.
Yes, it's such a crazy thing to envision. Like, I mean, just think of a maniac, you know, like receiving, like, no, from such a docile.
All three of those guys were at Stanford together at the same time.
And Harbaugh was coaching football. Harbaugh was coaching him, too, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
And we took, in round 5, we took David Perry, a DT out of Stanford also. So we love Stanford, and clearly we love Florida because we also took safety Clayton Gethers out of Central Florida University, which is great because after cutting LaRon Landry, we're pretty much left with Mike Adams and Dwight Lowry.
That guy does so much roids.
Yeah.
LaRon Landry. Yeah, I'm glad we cut him when we did. I'm not complaining at all about that. I'm just saying we need depth at safety, and hopefully, knock on wood, we got some. Yeah, overall, it was an underwhelming draft. I really wish we had taken a defensive player or an offensive tackle in the first round as opposed to wide receiver. OT. And I don't like why we took the wide receiver. That being said, I really hope Philip Dorsett pans out. It'll be awesome if he does. Maybe he'll take some time away from guys who can't catch the ball or run routes. Anyway, finally, Christian, we have your first round pick at 31. 32, you took defensive tackle Malcolm Brown out of Texas.
Love it. Absolutely love it.
Steel City.
Absolutely. I think it might be proved to be the steal of the draft, honestly.
Well, that's Marcus Mariota, according to John Gruden. Well, the second pick of the draft. Well, the steal of the draft.
Well, Gruden's Gruden for a reason.
John Gruden. This kid may be the steal of the draft.
But I love taking Brown. We needed a guy who could replace Will Fork. That is way more easily said than done. I watched a lot of that dude's highlights. He looks awesome. I mean, he's a really good pickup. Class guy, did a really good job at Texas, All-American, you know, big-time defensive player. He's a load. He's hard to move around. I mean, nobody's going to replace Vince Wilfork. He was a unique player in the middle. But this guy is going to do a real good job, and he's got a great defensive mind shaping him. And I love that.
Where did Wilfork go? Houston?
No, Wilfork was UMiami.
No, no, where did he go now? Like, where's he playing now?
Yeah, Texans.
Okay, gotcha.
Well, it's nice that you drafted a product of Texas high school football, but not only Texas college football, but Texas high school football also. Like, he's a Texas boy through and through. So
they make him big in Texas. He's living proof. He's a large person.
Well, how'd you feel about the rest of your draft?
Good. I mean, pretty good. I mean, 11 picks, 8 of them defense. You know, really good. The pick that I love, in addition to Brown, though, is our second pick with Jordan Richards, the safety out of Stanford. I actually watched a lot of Stanford this season, and he's
4 other people.
Well, I mean, just like I you know, Pac-12 is on, and you know, one of the blessings of the West Coast, I guess. But
I feel like that was the only Pac-12 team that I didn't catch a game from this year.
I mean, I watched him a bit. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't know if I told you guys, my second cousin played at Stanford a few years ago.
Hey,
never got off the bench, you know, O tackle. But
hey,
you know,
man, that's still sweet.
No, it's
still
really cool. So, I mean, saw, you know, it bit of a connection. But here's the bottom line: this guy, Jordan Richards, for starters, they called him Coach Richards at Stanford, starting his sophomore year. He's a really high IQ, great leadership player. And I just love him as, you know, because listen, we didn't take any big-time cornerbacks, obviously, because the biggest hole the Patriots have is replacing Revis and Browner. We weren't going to do that. But I love the fact that we've got a quality, you know, character and talent type defensive back, 3-time All-American, really, really good. I think that this guy is, and listen, just putting him in Bill Belichick's system, I think it's a big step in the right direction. This is a guy who could potentially, down the road, replace Devin McCourty. And I like that a lot. I think that's huge. So those picks are really good. You know, just going defense was great. I mean, our offense obviously doesn't need any help. Great draft. I'd give him an A. I think, you know, we shored up our roster a bit, and I think at least those two that I mentioned are going to be big-time players.
Awesome. Okay, that actually, yeah. Let's all do that. Grade your draft. Steve?
C.
Drew?
I'm going with a B+.
I'm going B-.
And I'm going A. I'm really pleased with this draft.
Cool.
I got a really quick question for the Patriots fan. Is your Super Bowl winning quarterback going to get suspended?
Okay, yeah. Wells report. That's got to be spoken to that too.
Yeah,
here's my deal.
Let's talk quickly about this one.
Yeah, real quick. I'll just run down the details of the report. Okay, so the report came out. The things that it said very clearly are Belichick and Kraft were pretty much completely absolved of any wrongdoing. The report found that they didn't know. What it comes down to is the guy in the spotlight is Tom Brady. There was absolutely no proof that was produced by the report, but what they said very clearly is more likely than not, two Patriot employees, the assistant equipment manager and some weird guy McNally, who is like a part-time employee, who, if you know, you read the texts that were intercepted a certain way, seems to have just been brought in to illegally deflate the balls. I mean, you got to read into those texts a little bit and assign a little bit of a plot to them, but it looked like that to me. That guy, the assistant equipment manager, and Brady are the three guys who might swing for this. And they said Tom Brady, the problem is the wording of the report is so stupid. It's like Tom Brady probably had a general idea that these balls, that something was going on with the footballs. Probably generally. So Brady's credibility is shot. He gave that horrible press conference where everybody thought he was lying. The Wells report thinks he's lying, but they can't prove it. Because it's vague language, I don't think he's going to be suspended.
Will he be fined?
I bet he'll be fined. I think he will be fined. I don't think he'll be suspended. I don't see how, if you can't prove something, you get a starting quarterback to miss games.
That's fair.
And I mean, to be fair, I don't know what the precedent is in terms of burden of proof is for the NFL. If this is a criminal trial, Brady would walk. If it was a civil trial, he'd lose and have to pay money. I think that's what he's going to have to do. I think that Brady is going to have to pay a fine, probably a pretty big one just because of how public this issue is. But I don't think that he's going to miss any football games.
Gotcha.
right.
That said, this still reeks. I couldn't believe those texts that I read. There was just... I mean, I thought that they must have been made up. It looked like something from The Onion.
It looked kind of hilarious.
It was like, ridiculous.
I couldn't believe that the two men like that were exchanging right. texts were like but 35 and 44
as far
years
as the,
old.
Right. As far as the Patriots are concerned, the team isn't going to suffer at all. They're not going to lose draft picks. The organization's not going to be fine. Belichick and Kraft aren't going to be fine. Because this looks like it was a very, very isolated, insulated thing.
Well, I'm so happy that Belichick is... Like, when I read owner Robert Kraft and coach Bill Belichick are, you know, not guilty of having any knowledge of this, and that, you know, they're completely oblivious.
Right.
It kind of made me, like, really happy because, like, of all the years, he's still to this day, all the shit Belichick takes yeah. for what he did in 07 with, you know, the Jets and all that shit.
Right.
I remember after Deflategate started coming out, like, maybe, like, 4 days after the AFC Championship game, people were writing all these articles on ESPN, like, the face of Belichick, is it the face of a liar? Is it the face of a cheater? And they'd find, like, the absolute worst pictures to find of him, and they'd just write scathing articles about, you know, how this man has to win at absolutely any cost, and he doesn't care what he has to do. He's exempt from the rules. He's above it all. Da, da, da. I'm so glad that they took the time to literally spell out, and as clearly as you can, this man had no knowledge of this.
Love it.
This man had no knowledge of this. He was calling the plays. He was winning the game on his own. He didn't need
right.
to tell anybody to deflate the football for his quarterback.
And it sounds like Brady lied to him, if the report is correct. Belichick asked him very, very clearly several times, like, did you know, do you know if somebody else did this? And Brady just told him flat out no. And that's why there was that whole hype about, you know, oh, Belichick threw Brady under the bus in that press conference. It's like, well, you know, Brady's answered the questions because Belichick had nothing to do with it. But I think Bill Belichick's legacy is coming out a lot cleaner than Brady's right now. That's for darn sure.
And that disappoints me as a fan.
I know, it's too darn bad, but I love that my fellow Wesleyan alumnus, Bill Belichick, is, you know, he came out clean in this one. It's good. It's good for our little school.
It's still stuck. I mean, remember after the Super Bowl when we were talking about, you know, the greatest quarterbacks of all time, we were talking about Montana and Brady and all these guys. If he did indeed start telling these guys to deflate the footballs for him on purpose, then that really, speaking for me personally, that really makes me really, really disappointed in him.
Oh, yeah.
Just
no
that, in terms of like, I mean, even going back to like 07 when like all my friends back home, the Dolphins fans were shitting all over him, and they still to this day.
Yeah.
You know, so I kind of like, I root for the guy, even though he's not on my team, I root for the guy just because of all the hate that he gets.
Yeah.
If it turns out that he did do this, yeah. though, I am not going to be rooting for him anymore.
Well, here's the thing: we're never going to know more than this. That was the investigation. That was the report.
But the question mark in my head is enough.
Oh
for
yeah,
me
no
to...
question. What I will say about it is this: Brady has totally, completely owned up to his teammates and the media that he likes a deflated ball. What those texts look like to me is that Brady's a total prick about footballs. He gives the equipment manager crap when the football isn't to his liking. I don't know if Brady specifically told the dude, deflate this thing after the refs have measured it so it's under the legal limit. I don't know if he did that. There's nothing to link to that. What I know is that these two guys who were exchanging texts had Brady breathing down their neck every game. You know, they mentioned the Jets game earlier in the regular season about how like, he's like, I mean, they said F Tom. You know, they didn't like the guy because he's so particular about the footballs. I don't know what Brady knows about PSI. That's what's never going to come out because that's the incriminating thing there.
At the end of the day, only one of those footballs was significantly under. I mean,
and the report even said that it wasn't as underinflated as initial reports.
Exactly. So to me, it does nothing for his legacy at all.
It's like I said before.
If you're gonna hang this on his legacy, then that's an awfully fragile thing that you're hanging it on. I don't think
matter.
That. Yeah, I don't
it
think
it matter. They would have won that game if they had been throwing a helium balloon.
Just nothing going on right now. So we got to talk about something.
Well, and that sucks too because we were done. No. We were done. We're moving on to the next season.
It should still be done.
That's why
I think we should just be done talking
exactly,
about it.
Exactly, yeah.
Because at the end of the day, he's still a great quarterback. Yeah. If he lied, that sucks.
Yeah.
He shouldn't do that. Shouldn't lie to his coach. Shouldn't lie to
the media or
the public. But at the end of the day, there's people who have done a lot worse things than
absolutely.
This.
Absolutely.
That. No don't get
that sway games yeah like
so. No absolutely 100% but still it you know it doesn't taint his legacy but like it still makes you question or it would make people in the future question all the things that came before it, I think right
I think
no
taints,
no
I
no
think
arguing
it
that
his personal legacy a little bit not
but, yeah his integrity as like for telling the truth
yeah okay
right
I don't know
All right, let's get the fuck out of here. As always, you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/the51yardline, Twitter, the51yardline, Instagram, the51yardline, and you can check out our new blog, 51yardline.com. Yeah, I just put up a piece, as I said earlier, about Mayweather-Pacquiao. Christian's got something going up later in the week, I believe.
Yes, indeed. Just a rundown on the playoffs and just kind of a plea to the sports gods to give us a Warriors-Clippers series because that would be great.
That's going to be good. So, yeah, look forward to that later in the week. And, yeah, that's what it is. We got some other things in the works. Christian and I have been kicking around idea for a soccer podcast. So we might start doing that every now and then.
Whew! Lionel Messi going off.
That what an insane game that I had to watch your texts about instead of watching the actual game today.
Happy to keep you updated.
Thank you. I do truly appreciate that. So, as always, for the King of Fort Lauderdale, Steve Cravens.
Until next time, everybody.
For Christian Schneider.
Tom, you've let me down, man.
For the incorrigible Drew Willers.
American Pharoah won the Kentucky Derby.
Woo!
Thanks, man.
There's a reason I call you incorrigible.
Hey, man.
Gotta
live up to the namesake.
I'm who I always am, Tyler Berry. And see y'all next time. We're out.